Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 436. And we got a bonus episode for you. And it's, I love it. I love it, man. We talked about doing this and within 2 days it was recorded. This is a chat with Mopes, who's a rapper from Providence, Rhode Island. He's on Strange Famous. He used to go by the name of Prolific. And we talk about all of this, but he quit music for a bit. Prolific and Buddy Peace came on tour with me years ago. We talk about that a bit. But yeah, we generally talk about his route into rapping, you know, getting in with Sage Francis and B. Dolan and Strange Famous in general, his reasons for retiring, essentially, and then his reasons for coming back as a different MC, producer, videographer under the name of Mopes, M-O-P-E-S. And man, it flows so naturally. It's, as I said, I've not caught up with Mopes since long before he was Mopes. So it was really, really genuinely nice to jump on Zoom and not just be firing each other an Instagram DM every now and then, or a like or a comment. So this was a really nice one. And I think you're going to really enjoy it. And you're going to, his new music's amazing. So yeah. There's plenty to get your teeth into with this one. As ever, I mentioned Sage Francis and B. Dolan. You can buy their records over at speechdevelopmentrecords.com, along with my own stuff, all sorts of other goodness over there. And you can support by going to patreon.com/ScroobiusPip, where for the price of like a cup of tea a month, you can support the podcast. And you might occasionally get some secret Zoom hangouts with me and stuff like that. So, yeah, loads of good stuff going on over there. Oh, there's not at my Patreon. There's hardly anything going on over there, but you get the idea. It's cheap and you can support. There's good stuff going on here, though, because this is episode 436 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with Mopes. Right, there we go. I've rushed into this recording because as soon as my guest popped up on screen, I just wanted to get into catching up. And that's what this episode is very much going to be. Like, mate, I've made the fewest notes. You can't see because my screen's glowing out there. But I've made such few notes because we just need to catch up. I'm joined today by Mopes. How are you, man?
I'm doing good, man. You know, shit's been crazy, yeah. Personally and obviously globally. And but honestly, I feel the best I've felt in I can't remember how long. So
yeah, it's one of the reasons I was excited to talk, because you know we don't catch up loads. We kind of go back and forth on social media every now and then. But I've kind of seen a new fire in you and a new drive and motivation, which is exciting. And then I've heard it on the music, and then I've had a mutual friend and Lord and Savior Sage Francis talk to me, hit me up saying, have you seen what's going on at the moment? Because it's all changed. So there's been excitement there. And then when I heard Sage on another podcast recently, he was talking about some of you guys' early days interactions, which I didn't know about. So, yeah, I thought we should just get on and catch up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of, it was weird. Like, you know, I went through some personal shit, ended up getting divorced before the pandemic started. And I had like a rekindled relationship with music. Cause like in 2015, 2016, I thought I was kind of done. I was just kind of like, you know, I had, my career was in video production, and I didn't really, it was kind of like a hard parting ways with music. You know what I mean? Where it's like, I just didn't see like the point of it. And then, once I got divorced and all the kinds of shit happened, I was like, I found music again. And I like realized how much I needed it, like how much it's like a coping mechanism for me, and how much I just love the process of it.
Yeah.
So I just slowly started to dip back into it, and then I haven't fucking stopped. It's just been like this. I've been like on a mission. And when I started, really, like, I wanted to get better as a producer, and I wanted to get, like, you know, writing for me has always been therapeutic, but I wanted to dive deeper and become a better writer, better rap, just everything. I wanted to get better at it. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to change my rap name.
Yeah. Oh, that's a big change. Like, this is the first time I've spoken to Mopes. Because we've not spoken since you became Mopes. So I know, it's kind of one of them.
Like, it's such a numbers, like, the music thing, you know how it's such a numbers thing. And, you know, the, like, having recognition, having some kind of clout always makes things a little bit easier. But there was a part of me that was like, fuck it, I want to start fresh. Like, I want to, like, because I was, I mean, when I first started, I was 17. The first time, like, I really started to get, like, I got recognition in Rhode Island at one of the open mics. And, you know, early 20s, like, there was, like, a lot of baggage that came with that name, Prolific, you know? Yeah. And a lot of assumptions with it. So I was like, I'm fucking going to change my name, and then I'm going to, and I'm going to just hit the ground running.
Well,
and
Prolific is, a traditional... Yeah. braggadocious rap name, right? It's telling you as soon as the guy walks in the door, it's like, yeah, I'm here to do my thing. It's
I was like, yeah, I just wanted to start fresh. I don't know. I think there was a part of me too that I had that hunger that I had when I was younger. I wanted to start from zero and some, like, as much as I could, and then work my way up, you know. Because there's something about not having all these narratives on you of who you are as an artist, and you know what I mean? Like, there was a lot of narratives about who I was as a person and all this, and I'm just like, fuck this shit. I'm starting, like, the 17-year-old me is there. Yeah. I'm like a 40-year-old dad now, and like I'm all grown up, you know?
I'm always excited about new music from you. I mean, we'll get into kind of where our paths have crossed in the past as well.
Yeah.
But I was really excited about this, and it's for two reasons. It's number one, it's because I knew you'd kind of successfully got out, if you know what I mean. You weren't on that, I've just got to make music because that's what I've got to do, and there's a new tour schedule or a new festival season or whatever else it might be. This was you got away, so now I know you're writing because you want to write. And that's always exciting to me artistically. The fact that it's not simply, particularly with independent artists, there is a level of, we've got bills to pay, you know? Mm. So an album, at a certain point, it has to come because I need to tour and I need to get these people back in the room and I need to see them at the merch booth and all this kind of thing. It can be a great motivator and it can create great work, but I don't know, something really, like, the reason I stopped making music was that kind of, I was like, right, every album I've made, I felt I've made it because I wanted to, and I'm starting to worry I'm going to start making it because I'm in this cycle, because I need to tour and all that. So I was like, I'd rather walk away and not do that. So, yeah, that number one excites me. But number two, it was the name change, because I know that's got to come from an artistic place and a you place. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Because you've built a name. Business-wise, I don't know if there was any pushback from Sage or Strange Famous or anyone else, because there's negatives in that. There is, like, business-wise, there is negatives in that.
Oh, for sure.
You've built your fan base. They know your name.
Oh, for sure.
If you're coming back, oh, here's Prolific. I've seen Prolific.
Yeah.
I've seen this. Whereas here's Mopes. Oh, what's that?
Yeah.
You know,
so I remember,
but that excites me. That kind of shit excites me because I know it's an artistic choice rather than a business choice.
Yeah. So let me, I'll back up because I want to say something you said before. Like, I hit a crossroad when I was like right when Ugly Truth came out.
Yeah.
Where I was like, am I gonna go this path with music or am I gonna go video production?
Yeah.
And there was a part of me that was just like, I don't know if I can bank my living on people liking me. I don't know if I'm that kind of personality. Like, I just, you know what I mean? Like, I am so fucking stubborn and I'm very much about the art of it that I don't know if I have what it takes to make, you know, cause I was broke. And I was like, do I want to be broke? Like, you know, but I have this other thing that I like and I can do. So that was a huge part of me. And I think a necessary part of me kind of venturing off doing the video production thing and then coming back.
See, that's a key, the key word as well there was like. Do you know what I mean? So many people in this industry are doing a job they hate to pay the bills to then make it to fund their music career or whatever else. Yeah. The key part there is if you've got something else that you like as well and you're good at, but that can pay the bills, I can completely see how that would be a, I'm going over here now.
Yeah, like video production is based on like skill. Like, so if you have skill and you can work with people, people will hire you. Yeah, but just because you have skill in music doesn't mean you're going to make it. You know, it's like that, you know, just because you're, you have 100% talent, if you don't have the business sense and you just, you don't have that right synergy with the crowd and, and timing, it just, it won't work out. And I was like, I don't know if I can place that bet, you know? So, but it worked out. Like
did you feel any of that was highlighted working with and being around people like Sage and Dolan? Because they're two people that I've met along my career who have both sides of that. They've got the business head for it and they've got that raw talent, that all these different things. And I think there's definitely people I've seen as part of the Strange Famous kind of crew who you can go, right, that one, they've definitely got the raw talent, but they maybe haven't got the connection or the this side of it or the that side of it. And I think that can be highlighted when you're around those who are going to be going. And both of them can be quite frank about shit, pardon the pun, as well, kind of thing, to be like, yo, here's what you got to be doing. Here's, it needs to be more, as you say, talent ain't enough in this game.
Yeah, I mean, Sage has been kind of my big brother since I was like 18, 19, growing up in the same scene. Like he was, you know, he's older than me and he got way more recognition than me obviously before. But when I started, he was kind of the bar in Rhode Island.
Yeah.
And he's, I mean, I'll, and I know I'm an, I like New York rap. Like I like, you know, Mobb Deep and all that shit, but Sage is top five, one of the best writers to me in hip hop, period.
100%,
and
man.
One of the 100%. Best performers, right? And so like seeing him, it's just like, fuck, like he's the pinnacle, you know what I mean? And I know that me and him are different. Like I can't, he puts himself out there in ways that, when, especially when I was younger, that I couldn't do. I think there was, he was definitely pushing me in ways that I wasn't ready. I was too immature. I wasn't, like, I didn't have enough self-confidence, I think. I couldn't see the road, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At that age. Like, I knew that, like, I was getting enough recognition and praise from people I respected and people who's like, who had, like, substance and opinion in underground hip-hop. But I'm like, I just don't see the road for me. So I've continued talking with him throughout this whole time. And then when I wanted to come back, like hungry and ready, and I was like, dude, look, this is what I'm thinking. Like, I'm on fire right now. And I was like, I want to change my name. This is what I'm thinking. These are my goals. And he was 100% at my back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think I've always trusted his opinion towards things. I've always asked his advice. And this time around I felt more confident and the energy felt right.
Yeah.
This, like, meaning like the past couple of years. And I just think I'm more mature and more smarter. And I'm hitting him up more now about advice probably than I did when I was younger, you know? So
can we rewind and talk a little bit about that journey from fan to family? Because I can relate to that completely. I was a Sage fan, even all this way across the pond. I was getting the thick of CDs on import at the one record store in London that could import stuff like that. I was going to shows and buying versions that didn't have a label off of him on like his early UK dates. And there's loads of that he doesn't even know about. Because I wasn't Scroobius Pip then. I wasn't anything to make an impact at that point. So it's mad years later. And I'm going to be doing a podcast about it actually in the future, because I realized there's a lot of these stories that aren't really there and no one knows. As I said, I've touched upon to Sage that, like, I gave him an early demo at a show of his in New York, and it wasn't until like 3 years later he heard of me on MySpace. It's like, oh no, we've met. I've tried to hustle you, but it didn't work at the time. I'm glad because, as you say, similarly, yeah. I wasn't ready then. Like, I've dug out the first email I sent to Sage, and it's the cringiest yeah. shit in the world. I'm yeah, swearing yeah. every other sentence to try and seem relaxed and comfortable. Like, I'm fucking, yeah. you know, it is what it is, man. And it's terrible. Yeah. So we properly met when the time was right. But I heard yeah. him talking on a great podcast recently, and he was mentioning you and saying how you were like a kid just turning up at the like, yeah. at the radio shows, at things like this. And he was, yeah. in his mind, literally a school kid's turning up, but is
yeah.
there to go and ready to go and hustle. Yeah. So what was that kind of, that introduction and then the journey?
Yeah, so when I first started writing, I was just writing in my bedroom, recording in my, like, my parents didn't even know. It was like a yeah. secret. And I was showing my demos to friends and stuff. And then I did, like, my first open mic at this, like, local spot in Cranston. And then, like, the big spot was this place called the Black Rep in Providence. That's, like, where everybody in, like, from, like, Boston, Connecticut, Rhode Island, like, that's what, that was, like, a huge hub for underground hip-hop at the time. So I got the balls to get up on stage and go there. And I kind of I had a little bit of a bell ringing. Like, I did pretty well, and people were like, oh, who the fuck's this kid? Because, like, at that time, like, again, there weren't many white folks doing it. So here I am, this very skinny white kid going up there, and, like, you're like, who the fuck is this kid? So that's how I started. That's, like, that was my journey into, like, Rhode Island hip-hop scene.
The motivation of doing it and realizing, number one, you can do it, and number two, you're
exactly.
quite good.
And I got, yeah.
And you've not kind of, because I had a very similar thing where I was like, I'm just going to do this. And then quite quickly, people were like, oh, you're dope. And it's like, oh, yeah. okay, well, maybe I can need, do this right? as a career then, rather than just.
Yeah, you just like, yeah. yeah. And I never had thoughts of a career. I was like, oh, shit.
I didn't know if I'd be allowed, just... let alone be told yo, I'm exactly, good and yo, be, exactly. you know.
Honestly, it was like a stamp of approval. Like, yeah. you can come here again, and we're not going to, yeah. like, boo you mercilessly off the stage, basically.
Yeah.
So that was my step in. I was like, oh, shit. Okay, maybe I can actually do this. And then I knew of Sage through. He would come on, there was a radio station, 90.3,
yeah.
a college radio station out of URI, where he would appear as a guest on Megan Stress's show. So I would hear, like, some of his freestyles and stuff.
Some of those made him on to, like, the Sick of Waiting EPs and stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
I'm sure
exactly.
a few freestyles yeah. and that from there were.
Yeah. yeah, so I heard it, and I was like, yeah, he's good. You know what I mean? I never really, I didn't, he wasn't really, like, what he became then. I just knew of his name. And then he got his own show, his own radio show. And then he started playing stuff like Soul, Alias, the early Indycon dudes, Buck 65. He was playing just like all kinds of music that I haven't heard of. 6-2. I was like, what the fuck is this shit?
Yeah.
So then I was like, okay, it's like, so I know that I have to get him my demo. So we just would cross paths at like random open mics, or I would go to one of his shows. And then at some point I had the, like, I think it was his last show. I built up the courage to give him my demo to play on his radio show. And we drove up there. Like, so it's probably like a 40-minute drive. We drove up there. I gave him my demo and the dude played it, but I couldn't even listen to it. I had left the room. I had to leave this. I had to go outside. I was like, I can't even, yeah. I was so, it was a moment, but I was so, you know how it is. I was like, kind of embarrassed, but like I just couldn't hear. I was like cringy. I was very cringy. It was email that you sent him. That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
So, and that's what kind of, that kind of solidified like the first step in our relationship. And then he would kind of check up on me, and I would, I started going to some of the spoken word stuff that he was doing. And that's when I really saw like who this dude was as a writer.
Yeah.
And like his first couple of spoken word pieces I saw live, I was fucking floored. I knew about Saul Williams, but I hadn't seen somebody who I heard rap kind of transition and then start to see them blend what they were doing, their writing from spoken word into rap. And I was just like, holy shit. So he just kind of became this, again, he set the bar. It's like, if I'm going to do this, like, this is the guy. Like, he's the guy that I'm going to chase and I'm going to emulate. You know what I mean? And I want to try to learn from. So in and out of scenes. And then I had gone to Scribble Jam in 2000. I think I was 18.
Yeah.
Fucking, again, I was like very young, very naive. And I met him there and he introduced me to Soul from Anacon. He introduced me to Kevin Beecham. And he just, again, he just kind of big brothered me along the way. And like, I don't think I've ever told anybody this, but I almost signed to Anacon when I was young.
Yeah.
But just didn't work out. But yeah, he just introduced me to all those folks. And then I had put out another demo in like 2003. And then I had done a group album with this dude Robust on Galapagos 4 called Stick Figures. And then around that time, I had went on my first tour. And I remember getting the email. He's like, hey, I'm like going to push Strange Famous and make it like a label. You're going to be the first act. Are you down? I'm going to pair you with Reanimator. I'm like, fuck yeah, dude, let's go. Like, let's go, you know? And that's been our history, you know?
Amazing. So, it's
crazy.
I think it's fascinating to hear. And again, no matter how many different times I hear either stories direct or experience them myself or hear them on podcasts, it's amazing to hear how small and intimate that kind of scene was at the time with Soul, with the Anticon lot, with the Strange Famous lot, with the Rhymesayers lot. From this side of the pond, that was the fucking dream and the goal. Yeah, and I'm assuming that this is huge. Everyone over the world knows about it. And I remember playing a Strange Famous show at South by Southwest. And again, I've probably mentioned this a few times on the podcast, but I'm about to go on and Buck 65 is side stage talking to Idea and the Doomtree lot are in the crowd and Sage is introducing and Dolan's on the merch. And I'm thinking, this is my CD collection at home in this room. And it's real when they're just normal people. Like, as you mentioned, Scribble Jam, I instinctively glanced over at my DVD collection because, again, importing those DVDs was my things. So the thought of just rocking up there and going, hello, you know, here's what dude,
I remember I took a Greyhound bus. Actually, it was me and my other friend. We took a Greyhound bus from Providence to Cincinnati. I think I had just turned 18. I think he was 16. And we we took the bus and at some point Vast Air was in the seat in front of us.
God damn.
And this is before Can Ox stuff because one of the first producers I worked with, Sunspark, he was from Long Island and he knew some of the members of Adam's Fam, which Vast Air came from.
Right.
In New York. So I remember, and I'm like, yo, is that fucking Vast in front of us? And then sure enough, I see him at a Scribble Jam. I'm like, yo, we're on the fucking bus together. Yeah, it was just a different time because it was so raw and everybody was hungry and it'll never be a time like that again. It was crazy.
So, you know? So how was that being paired up as kind of the launch pad of Strange Famous? For those who don't know, Strange Famous was the label that Sage Francis set up initially to release his mixtapes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you he paired you up with a Reanimator. It was prolific, and Reanimator stuff was the first time I heard of you. Because again, Strange Famous had that reputation and that benchmark that it's like, right, I'll pay attention to this in years to come with B. Dolan, with putting out whether it's albums or collabs with Buck 65 or with Aesop appearing on stuff and all sorts of other stuff. This was kind of the standard. Did you feel a pressure there? Because again, you're going from rap kid to you're on a label now, which means there's going to be pressure to tour. There's going to be play live. There's going to be either tour on your own or support. And these things are real. And particularly I found it out as soon as I came and toured America. America's a big place. It's not an easy thing to tour. I think of touring in the UK as a struggle, but in reality, it's a couple of hour drive each day or whatever. When we did our first American tour with Dolan, it was, it's a slog, man. So how was that being given the opportunity, but then realizing, right, now I need to also step shit up. Like, this isn't just a, yeah. oh, here you go. This is a, I'm opening the door, but you've got to come in,
yeah.
make your way up four flights of stairs and get in the room yourself.
Yeah. I mean, so luckily I had a little bit, I had toured a little bit before mm-hmm. I got signed on his label. I was on like a small label, which is Galapagos 4. I already started to put stuff out independently. So I kind of had a little bit of a foundation to work with.
Yeah.
But it's different because now it's like a little, you know, you're more on a spotlight. You're more, there's more expectations of you. And I mean, and Dolan and Sage, man, that's two of the best writers out yeah. there, you know? Yeah. So it's a high bar to come through. But I knew that I was like, I always knew I was going to be myself. Like, I can only be who I am, and I can't be anything other than that. So, and I try to work my ass off. So, like, I knew the music was going to be there. But for me, the struggle was I like 90s New York rap. Like, that's my, like, I listen to Prodigy and I try to sound like him, even though I don't sound anything like him, but I'm still trying to sound like Prodigy. Like, so I had to, there was a, I had to get like more sophisticated about music and not just like 90s hip hop sound, mm-hmm. you know? And Reanimator as a producer is just, I've never worked with anybody of that talent who yeah. actually understood producing, who actually understood music. So that whole album for me was just like a lesson of rather like
than
how to put it
rather than just sample loops, which a lot of rap, particularly early days yes. rap, is just here's sample loops because that's the 90s kind of New York hip hop style.
Yeah,
and it's
exactly,
always exciting
right?
it's like, when you find a producer who's like, oh no, we're building, like, we're making music.
Yes,
here.
We're making a song. Yeah, yeah. This is how you actually like have peaks and valleys in a song. This is how we're going to arrange it. And like, even though the song is good, it doesn't really fit with the overall feel of the album. So like, just shit that I never thought about because yeah. I don't have any yeah. musical background. I was yeah. like, I just, you know, like, we just start writing, you start making beats, and that's kind of your education is yeah. just jumping in the water, right? So that whole experience of putting an album together, like I was just kind of sitting back and learning from Reanimator and learning from Sage and just how they put things together. I learned about like dubs, you know, doing your overdubs, like doing multiple overdubs mm-hmm. and layering and all that stuff. So that whole aspect for me was such an amazing learning experience that I
Sage
know
is,
that.
Sage is 100% the man to learn from his... on that yeah. right his
and
meticulousness on vocal recording and layers
yes.
and overdubs, it's like he's a beast
yeah
on
I
that.
Mean he's I mean yeah he's a 100% a beast, and Reanimator on his end, he's another beast who yeah. who is doesn't get a lot of recognition because he's kind of a phantom, you know, he's just yeah. like this guy that puts out music but no one really knows who he is, but he just like his layering of samples, his like you can just hear all these influences. Like you can hear Bomb Squad. You can hear like folky like rock stuff, and he made it work. And I had to get used to that because I'm just like I want to hear like you know I want to hear a soul sample and just drums on it. You know, yeah. So I had to get used to that. I had to learn. So that was crucial for me to be able to evolve as an artist, because that was the one thing too, is that I wanted to evolve, and one of the things that I was hoping and I know did happen with me signing with Sage is that I wanted to evolve and get better. Mm-hmm. So, but then, yeah, then that's like the pressure of like, all right, I got to fucking step my game up. Like I got to like, you know, my performing. Yeah. I should have said this. Like, so after the first time I performed, I had such bad cotton mouth that I right. couldn't, like, I think you thought I was on heroin or something like that.
Yeah.
So I was always super nervous going on stage, and it was just like, I just need to get this over with. Like, I need to not fuck up. I just need to have enough solid of a set. So it's like, you know, that there's really no extras. It's really just like, I'm going to perform this, do the best I can, and that's it. Mm. But seeing him and being around him, I started to get better as a performer, you know? And then
it's a big
and
thing,
like,
man.
Seeing what
as, he does, as said, I really think in rap for a long time, in UK and in America, there was live performance was where so many people yeah. let themselves down because they're just going out and here's that song. It's like, all right, I could have just put a CD on, you know, and the sound would have been better. And there's no performance. And not that it has to be a big stage show or whatever else, but you need to make people know they're in the room and this is happening in front of them. It's not just and you know they're in the room. It's not just if they weren't there, you'd be doing exactly the same. It's like, no, this is an exchange. It's an exchange of energies between two
100%
two groups, you on stage and you off stage.
And I think I was always like, I was always a writer. Mm. I liked writing. I loved the process of the art form. That was my whole thing. And performing was just something that I had to learn how to do. Like, I never really had a natural upbringing of being a performer in front of people. So it's something that I had to like really focus on and get better at. And I think but I've also had to be myself because I don't like flashy. I don't like doing shit just because it's trendy. Like, I had all these rules. You know what I mean? That was the other thing too. Like, I wanted to just kind of be myself on stage. And the thing is, Sage was cool with that. He's like, just do your thing, be you, but be confident and think about that separately from the writing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of the things he told me too that has helped me to this day is like your energy. He's like, take that nervous. I remember he told me this. I was like, I would go up to him and get notes like after my performance and just like, how did I do? Like, how did I do, coach? Like, tell me what. And I remember one time he's like, just stop being nervous. I'm like, dude, what the fuck? Like, if I could stop being nervous, I would just snap. You know what I mean? I would do that. And what he said to me is like, just take the energy that you have, that nervous energy, and like, transform it into something else. Transform it into a different kind of energy. Mm. And when he told me that, it's like he was trying to explain the universe. I'm just like, what the fuck are you saying? You know what I mean? And then at some point, I finally understood, like, oh, like that, all that rush that you're feeling, stop using it to hinder yourself and use it to fucking like put the fire out there, basically.
Yeah. You need to get that out of you with your performance. Exactly. Get
it out. Yeah.
Rather than hold it the whole time. And then when you're finished, let it out,
I didn't get that until years of performing. And then I was like, okay, now I understand what's going on. So yeah, I mean, dude, it was a crazy ride. Like, I went on tour with Soliloquist and ADM, Maker, X144. That was like the first tour with Strange Famous. And that was like the months before the album was supposed to drop. And then what happened is Reanimator's hard drive crashed.
Oh, damn.
So he had to remake a lot of the beats. So that pushed it back. And then they ended up releasing Buck's album. So that pushed it back. And then it's like, it was done in 2006, but didn't come out until 2008.
Wow.
And in between then I was performing, but it's like, I feel like I've done these songs so many times now that like, I can't keep touring this album. It's not even out yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I got stuck. I was like in this place of like, fuck. And I was broke. I was like, what am I going to do? Like, I don't know if I can swing this.
Yeah.
Basically. I think I was starting to have self-doubt, self-confidence, like self-confidence issues as far as like, is this really going to happen for me? And that's when I had those moments of like, am I going this way? Am I going to go that way?
It's mad to get your big break and then have it on pause. Like, have it paused to get that call. We want to release your record to meet Reanimator, to make this record, and then have to almost chill on it for a year and a bit. That's a weird situation.
So that's where I was at. I'm like, fuck. And then I think I just started to get jaded a little bit. Mm-hmm. Don't jaded, but just scared. I'm like, I can't see myself. I don't know if I can put all my eggs in this one basket because I have no backup. Like, I don't have somebody who's going to give me money. I don't have like a job just waiting for me. I got to start putting energy over here in this other world if I want to be able to fucking survive, basically. So basically between 2008 and 2012, which was like the year between Ugly Truth and when my next album come out, I had just slowly started to drift into this side of like more towards video production. And the other thing too that I regret, but I learned from now, is that I didn't see the accomplishments that The Ugly Truth made. I had put so many expectations on it that it was going to be, that it needs to hit this certain amount and this kind of gain. And I felt like it was a failure a little bit.
Right. That's mad.
But it
yeah.
wasn't. No. I mean, I'm still, that album still fucking sells. It's crazy.
Yeah, it feels like it's one of the staple Strange yeah. Famous releases.
Yeah, it's like, I never, like, I didn't really tour it. I didn't really promote, I didn't really promote it that much. And it's like, it still really did fucking well. So I wasn't, my head was in the negative when it came to music at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, I was seeing all the negative and I was like putting projections onto it. So I just was like, I got to go here. So I was splitting the world of rap and video production. And then, yeah, I just slowly started to drift away from it, even though I still love the process of it. But I mean, that also too, I should mention, a huge part of me going this way was social media.
Yeah.
During that time of like MySpace, like I loved MySpace.
Yeah. Yeah.
MySpace was dope. It's like, I can put my music here. Like, it's just, this is my curation of my art.
Yeah.
And then when it started to go to like Facebook and Twitter, it's just like, I'm not that guy. Like, I don't like going out and...
It's such a mad one, man. And with my kind of...
I couldn't make it.
With my kind of label manager hat on, I can look at it and go, right, as an independent artist these days, musically, with the lack of avenues to make money because of Spotify, because of all these other things, you need to be on point on your socials, or on point on everything, on your touring, on your live show, on your socials, on your your output. But I can also look at that and go, yeah, but if that isn't coming naturally to you, that, I mean, even if it is natural to you, that place is a fucking hellhole. Like, me again, me and B and Sage and numerous others have spoken about this ad nauseum, but these places aren't good, and it's a massive bugbear that we've all kind of been forced to rely upon them to make our careers work, because it's true. It's not easy to do any of these things without social media, getting the word out there. Even with social media, if you're not doing paid posts and whatever else these days, again, all been discussed many a time, but I can see how that can be a weird, how that could put you off the industry if you're going, like, I don't like this place. If this has to be my place of work as well, maybe I'll go and work over here. Because on video production, you don't need to be doing any of that shit. That's someone else's job.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. Now, looking back on all that shit, like, I don't think I put the label owner hat on until later on in that kind of thing. Because, I mean, you know, obviously Sage gave me an opportunity. And the industry went buck wild, though. You know, it's like, because it was like a complete... We were used to hand-to-hand demos and open mics and shit. And then I got good at that. I got good at that stuff.
Yeah. That interaction on the merch booth, that building a fan base face-to-face. Yeah.
And I did really well on like MySpace. I had good numbers on MySpace. And then I'm like, fuck, I got to do this all over again. I was like, I don't have the energy. And now I have to tell you like what I'm doing during my day. Or like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even give a shit. Like, I'm supposed to, you know, and... Yeah, so I was like, I don't think this is for me. I don't think this is my. Like, I still love music and I want to keep putting it out, but I don't think I'm gonna go down that road of trying to make this be my career. And that's kind of what happened.
Or that kind of happened a little while after. Again, I need to reminisce briefly on this. When you came over and did some shows with us in the UK, and I can't decide, that must have been the last time we saw each other.
Yeah.
Right. I would have thought. How did you find that? Because again,
it was incredible.
As Dolan talks all the time, touring outside of your country is dope, but it's not getting in a van and going somewhere. It's getting in on a train to a plane, then getting on a plane, then getting in this and doing all that. I remember it was a 2013, because I remember we were backstage at one point listening to Rap God, because Rap God had just come out, and there was a mixture of joy and annoyance, because Eminem, I don't know, for me personally, I'd stopped being a fan of him, but then Rap God came out and technically it was jaw-dropping.
It's incredible.
As rap fans, I remember us all being backstage and putting it on and going, oh shit, and then it keep going and going and going, oh shit, and then him dropping an F-bomb. And it being, ah, oh, that's a disappointment. But then, oh, shit, it's, you know, that weird mixed emotions of when Eminem is as good as he's capable of being.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, what are your memories of that that brief period. It was only a handful of shows and whatnot, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so that was, I had performed in Finland, and I had performed in, that was really my first experience outside of the U.S.
Yeah, performing.
And that was my first time meeting Buddy Peace, who I had done the album Working Man with on Strange Famous. That was my follow-up to Ugly Truth. So it was like and it was my first time really getting to hang out with you.
Yeah.
So it was more of like, this is, I'm about to have fun. I don't have to put work in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like, I want to go here and enjoy myself, basically. And it was incredible. Because there's just like, it's like, and I've been, again, I had been to Europe before. It's like dealing with a mature adult is what Europe is like.
Yeah.
Where the U.S. is just like this like annoying bratty teenager.
Yeah.
Like, we're so spoiled with stuff and we're so, our thinking is so young.
Yeah.
And immature. And I think that's the same way how people appreciate music.
Yeah.
I feel like there's an actual appreciation over there for what I think is good music.
Yeah.
Where over here, it's like if you don't have clout, people are just like, ah, fuck you. It doesn't matter what you sound like. You know what I mean? Like if you don't have all these stamps of approval and then meet all of these criteria, I don't even fuck with you.
Think,
it doesn't even matter.
I think
if
there's
I like
also
it.
A really interesting thing, regardless of country, I think there's a really interesting thing in the mystery of being from somewhere else. I know when I started off, I played all over the north of England before I ever played in the south, because my thought was, if I'm turning up there and I've got my show on point and I've got a record that I've made at home, they're all going to assume I'm this success that I wasn't. And then by the time I came to the south, I kind of was the success I'd been pretending to be in the north.
Yeah.
And I think there's a thing with that. If you're an American act and you're playing in the UK, you must be doing some shit. You know, this isn't an easy thing. Someone's flown you out. It's not this kind of, oh, we've got a spare slot at the show. Yeah, you can have it.
Yeah.
Someone's flown you out. There's an album, there's labels.
This is
legit. It's not a local opener. It's the opposite of a local opener, you know?
Yeah. Honestly, I remember being there. I was like, I should have did this 4 years ago.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking in my head. I was like, I should have, you know, it's like the shoulda, woulda, coulda stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was funny because that year, so like after we had toured in that December, I found out that my wife at the time was pregnant. So that was like the whole, like, complete shift of me just leaving music, basically.
Yeah.
But it was incredible, man. Like, it was just, it felt like almost a little bit like a last hurrah. Like, okay, this is dope. Like, I sold out of all my merch. You know, I learned a lot from you, man. You're like the gentleman's hustler. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because like you do it, you have a hustle, but you do it in a way that doesn't seem slimy, and it's not like it seems genuine, but like you're just smart at what you do. Like you're very strategic.
My outlook was always that things don't have to be one thing, if you know what I mean. Like, someone would say, oh, you're only on the merch booth because you'll sell more records that way and make more money. It's like, oh, for sure, that's one reason. But I'm also here because it's dope to meet people and because of my experience as a fan of Sage being on the merch booth and knowing I'm buying a record I already own because I want the version that's signed by Sage. And this is the only
£10
in my
experience.
Pocket.
And, you're giving them a memory, basically.
So again, it's that realisation of, right, this is, from a hustle side, this benefits me to be here rather than have someone else running a merch booth. And I'm saving money on a merch guy.
Yeah.
All of these are benefits, but also it doesn't have to be only that. It can be, I'm genuinely excited and it's, there's value, you know?
I think you were just starting to do the podcast.
Yeah.
I think you were starting to get into acting.
Yeah.
And like your music videos are on point. So you just like, it was like a different experience for me from a lot of the US folks that I met.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then just like, and I'm the kind of person where it's like, it doesn't matter who you are, what, like where you come from. I'm trying to have a learning experience.
Yeah.
So I treated that whole tour as just a learning experience for me of just seeing how you operate, seeing how UK operates, and just trying to take it all in.
So much of that comes from exactly what you said about your first show, of realizing that you're allowed to do this. And I think there's the opposite a lot of the time with musicians, is there's an entitlement. Like, why aren't more people listening to me? Why aren't I signed? Why aren't I doing this? the reason I'd always jump into music videos and tours and all of that with such passion would be, fuck, I'm allowed to make a music video. This is crazy. Yeah. I'm gonna do this rather than, oh, we need to do a video for this, or who's gonna direct it and whatever else, and tours and everything else. Oh, we need to promote the record. I'll be like, people are booking me. This is insane. Again, it's that small town thing. It's being a kid from a small town that I'm like, I always remember on the US tour, our manager hitting us up when we played Ames, Iowa, and saying, look, we've sold 12 tickets. Do you want to do this or not? And I was like, mate, until this tour, I didn't know what Ames, Iowa was. I'd never heard of that place. So the fact that there's 12 people there who have booked tickets in advance, like regardless of who might go, oh, there's a show on tonight, let's turn up. The fact that 12 people had bought in advance blew my mind. And it was one of my favorite shows because it was just like, yo, this is nuts.
I mean, so a couple of things on that. So I was into hip hop being like, I can't fucking believe I'm here.
Yeah.
I've had so many experiences. Like, I never traveled that much as a kid. Like, I went to like Disney World once, and we would travel to like New York City and Boston. We weren't going to Europe, but we weren't going to California. So it had given me so much. Like, I've seen the U.S. so many goddamn times and got to experience so much that I had felt full. Like, I was like, I don't need anything more from this. Like, hip hop has given me so much that sense of entitlement. Like, I've been given something that isn't entitled. Like, this isn't entitled. Like, I'm super fortunate to have been able to have done and seen the things that I was able to do. Mm. Right. So that was another of me of like, okay, this feels like a nice little complete thing that I did here. Like, I don't need, there's no other expectations of me to have anything else. And then, to your point about like, small towns, like some of the best shows happen when you don't realize it. You know what I mean? Like, it might be 20 people there. It might be some random city you just booked between two cities, thinking like, we just need to kill time before we get from this major city and this other major city. Yeah. And then that show turns out you just sell a bunch of shit. Dude, and everybody's into it. Never know.
I was walking my dog a few months back, and this guy had a dog, and he came and played with our dog. And he said, I just want to say, you know, I've seen you alive, and we met once. He's like, you won't remember. He started to mention the gig, and it's one of the gigs I remember clearest in my head, because there was four people there. It was in like this nightclub, and there was just DJs all night. And then at like 1 a.m. they were moving them aside for us. But again, it stayed in my head because of the fact that there were four, like, we were being paid to be there. I think we were actually on at 2 a.m. We were being paid to be there. And there were these four people who had sat through this god-awful club night that wasn't like a hip-hop thing or anything. It wasn't the right fit. So that gig meant the world to us. So as soon as he mentioned it, I was like, of course I remember that. They had hot dogs on sale inside the club. Our room was an alpine ski lodge, like a fake alpine ski lodge, and we were playing in there. And it was amazing, like, because again, to him, it was just this weird night is what it is. But it's like, no, that's the gig I remember. If that said, oh, I saw you at Coco, where, you know, we've sold out numerous times, it's been amazing, I'd remember it, but it wouldn't be as clear a memory. Yeah. That is the stuff that stands because out and surprises like, you.
As the performer, you're like, okay, there's five people here. I'm not gonna, like, I hate when people get all pissy, you know, and they just like, they get all disciplined, they take it out. Like, I was like, no, it's like, just make this shit a fucking experience.
Like, how easy is it? Yeah. You've got a sold out show. It's fucking easy. Cause as soon as you walk out, they're cheering.
Yeah.
It's when you've got four people and you smash it. That's the stuff that sticks with you. Cause you go, I've got a right to be here. That would have been easy to go out and just go through the motions and move on. But we put on a good show because, again, that work ethic that Sage and Dolan and everyone else will have drilled into us. It's like, no, you make it a show for whoever's there.
And you know, too, like, there's still people that came out to see you.
Yeah.
So it's like, how are they going to feel if you just go out and shit the bed for them?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, life lessons that I've learned through hip hop. So.
Well, before I wrap things up, I want to talk more about the new record, because it does feel like the record of someone who's comfortable in what they're doing now, if that makes sense, knows what they want to do. There's elements that remind me of personal journals. And again, I think it's lazy to be comparing Dolan to Sage or anyone else to Sage on Strange Famous and all that. But there's elements of that there because it feels like you've lived. I guess it's probably when you're doing like playing bits of recordings of conversations and stuff like that, which all that. But again, that stuff comes from having done this shit for a while, and rather than being, oh, here's how I make a song, here's the beat, here's this, it's going, oh, I'm going to drop that in now, I'm going to have this, I'm going to have a guest at this point, I'm going to go where we
go. I think I'm so much smarter as an artist.
And I mean, a weird thing to highlight as well is the variation in track lengths. There isn't the young kid kind of thing of it needs to be at least 3.5 minutes long to 4 minutes. There's a couple of 2 minute songs on there, and I love it when an artist knows how long that song needs to be rather than it outstaying their welcome. There's loads of particularly indie rap that'll end up having this long unnecessary outro because they feel I only wrote a verse and a half and it needs to go somewhere.
The last song on my album is like almost 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, this, like, it's, that's how long that song felt like it should be to me.
Yeah.
And I think now it's like, I know what I want to make. And I produced the whole album.
Yeah.
So like, I'm going into it being like, I know the work of art that I want to create. This is it. Where before it was like, I was like, I would make songs and like, I'm like putting the fucking pieces together. But it's like, now it's like, there's more of a strategy. There's more of a strategy musically and artistically.
Yeah.
Where before, I think I was like, I just had to write dope songs.
Yeah.
And I wasn't stepping out. And I wasn't the producer. I was mostly just a rapper. And now I feel comfortable in the role of being like, I'm going to write this. I'm going to produce this shit. And I'm gonna have the vision for it.
Yeah.
And hopefully it comes through like that.
100% comes through. And again, it's another thing that excites me about the clear, genuine artistic hunger is that you're producing for other people as well on Strange Famous. And you've been making beats for new artists that are coming over. Yep. You're taking on that reanimator role of being kind of the guy in the background, just going, I'll make this stuff here. It's yours now. See you soon. Rather than it all being, I'm back. Here's all these bars I've been writing. Here's this, here's that. It's like, no, I want to create. I just want to
I mean, I'm at a, I can't, I think it's like when I didn't have it, I didn't realize I missed it.
Yeah.
And now that I have it again, I'm like holding on to it forever until the creativity leaves me, you know, because that's one of the things that creatives understand is that when you're in the zone, you tap into something that's kind of outside of yourself. I'm not into like God and religion and all that shit, but there's an energy out there that you just fall into it. It's like a stream that you fall into 100%. And you're just like, I'm going to ride this until it spits me out and I'm doing something else. But while I'm in it, now being a mature adult, I'm going to maximize the shit out of it.
And you become aware of that because of the break 100%. That you've had. As I said, there's been 100%. So many things that people hit me up about, lyrics or tracks or videos or whatever, and I'll be like, I swear I don't even know the guy that made that because it feels so far from what I'm doing at the moment and where I am at the moment.
People will hit me up about lyrics from my oldest shit. I'm like, I don't even fucking remember that shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I have to go back and listen to it to remember how that shit finished.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you know what I mean? Like there's some songs that I'll remember because they're so personal, but most of them I'm just like, that guy is just, he's fucking over there now.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, feels a completely different person. And, and I think that's one of the energies that I feel like I'm bringing to the label where it's like, look, you don't have to do anything. But it's like, I'm driving 60 miles an hour. And if you want to come hop in the van for a little bit, you can come hop in the van with me. But like, I'm not going to stop for you and I'm not going to do any changes for you, but you can come along for the ride with me. Yeah. And it's been incredible working with Jesse the Tree and Black Lick and, some of the new blood at, Strange Famous, and I'm also working with some of the like this dude Trademark, which I don't know if you ever checked his album out.
No.
Blood Meridian. He was it was like a sleeper that came out in like 2018. He's dope. He's got a crazy history too because he was down with Esoteric back in the day. But me and him are working on stuff, so it's just like it's this hodgepodge of people that I'm working with, and it's really based on do our energies work together? Like, do our energy? Like, can we find a unity? and make something special kind of thing. So that's where I'm at, and I'm going to keep moving. And I have, my social media strategy is kind of meh, but like, as far as like the music that I create and like the packaging, like I'm really into branding and packaging and all that stuff. Yeah. And Storm has been great to work with. So me and him have been talking a lot, and I feel like I've been talking to Sage more now than I ever did when I was younger.
Oh, that's what, you know? I said. It's why it's I was crazy. Like, it's why I hit you up and I was like, we need to talk and get you on the podcast, because it feels now more than ever you're pumping through the veins of Strange Famous, rather than being like, oh, well, there's an album coming out. It's like, no, you're pulling in this next generation of Strange Famous artists, and you're producing, and you're also back doing your own shit. I'm glad you briefly mentioned Storm there, because again, the true unsung kind of hero of Strange Famous, just doing so much.
He's got
much
ideas, man. He's the man behind the scenes. And it's funny, he was the one who was just like, when I had talked about the name change, he was just like, what? And I'm like, dude. And then the funny thing with, I was talking with him, was like, I'm changing my name from Prolific to Mopes, but guarantee I am more prolific now creatively than I was the fell of fucking name.
I'm now going to be so prolific I don't need to mention it. Like, it's unignorable. I don't need that as my name, because it's like, it'd be like me walking in the room and calling myself Bearded. You can't avoid that shit. I'm hairy. Yeah.
And honestly, man, I mean, so I had the album that's going to come out February 18th. This has been done since like early 2021. But Storm came up with me, Storm, and Sage came up with the strategy of like, let's introduce these new folks. Like, so I had Black's album done, and Storm's like, why don't we come out with an EP where you feature Black and Jesse? So, and then we have the name change. So it's like this nice little, and the shit worked.
Yeah, man.
Like, I can't believe how people, for one, the reception. I mean, I haven't put anything out in almost 6 years. The support that we've had has been incredible. So, I got recognized in a local paper who fucking would, like, we never got recognition from them. So it's like bizarre world right now. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm just like, I'm just going to keep moving at the pace I'm moving, and, whatever happens, happens kind of thing, you know? But like the passion is fuming right now. So,
I love it. Yeah. It's exciting to watch, man, and I'm excited for all that's ahead. And I appreciate you taking the time. As I said, the reason I wanted to roll even before we've caught up, because I was like, I just want to catch up. That's what it needs to be. There's so much that the last time I spoke to you, I spoke to Prolific, and now I'm speaking to me. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? All these things. I'm like, let's explain this for everyone to hear.
Yeah, and dude, now you're like a famous actor.
There's been some changes.
Yo, this shit is wild. And I just want to say too, man, like, we're all rooting for you, man. Like, I'm super proud. And
I appreciate it.
Again, I'm still looking at you as like an inspiration to learn from, because it's amazing to see someone be successful in one area, then be able to transition and be successful in another area. So
I appreciate that, man. I always remember when me and Gene Grace sat down and spoke, and we were both talking about how we've been inspired by each other without knowing each other from across the pond, because she's always been that one that I've always felt, she'll go and do whatever the fuck she wants, and people will have to come along or not come along. As you were saying, get on board or don't get on board. Yeah. It's your choice. Yeah. And I love that when there's people that we can all be kind of inspiring each other a back and forth, and we might not know, but it's hitting, man. So.
Yeah, and I think that's important, man, you know? Yeah. And I wanted to tell you that too. So I'm glad that you have me on, man. Like, it was great to kind of catch up.
It's been awesome, man. Thank you very much.
All right, dude.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was Mopes. This bonus episode and this week's actual episode with GeoWizard, you're going to be hard pushed to find me have more fun in conversations. In fact, the week before as well with Youssef Kakar. Three people in a row who I couldn't have been happier to be talking to. One in Youssef that I'd chatted to on Instagram and stuff, but never actually had a proper chat with for a while. One in GeoWizard, aka Tom Davies, who I'd never had any interactions with, but I've watched hours of his stuff. And one in Mopes, who I've not caught up with in years. And even though we knew each other, I hadn't really heard his story or his journey. I just knew he was really good at rapping. So yeah, some joyous podcasts of late. I hope you're enjoying them as much as I am. Give us all a shout on the socials. Go get at Mopes. Come get at me. And yeah, have a chat. Say hello. Let me know what you think. Let me know if you're enjoying the podcast. It's a weird world at the moment, isn't it? How, I don't know, at times it feels like we're firing all this stuff off into the ether. But yeah, I'm recording loads at the moment as well. It's why you're getting fairly regular double episodes or, you know, bonus episodes throughout the week, because there's so many good people I want to talk to. And as you know, it's not always going to be a huge Hollywood star with millions of followers. There's going to be a variation, and I like to make sure I don't pick based on thinking, oh, that'll give us a spike, or that'll do this or do that. And it just means I'm getting so many great people on at the moment. So yeah, it's really good fun, and I appreciate you all for listening. I've been rambling on for ages now, so you're probably not listening to this, but again, if you listen this far, come at me on Instagram, come at me on Twitter, and let me know. Yeah, so until next week. Next week might be huge, right? Next week might be huge. At the moment, the guests I've got lined up for next week, I've not recorded with yet, but probably the biggest guest I've ever had on the podcast. Yeah, I'd say at least as big as any guest I've had on the podcast. So, there's a late into the outro tease for you, isn't there? Yeah, so get ready for that. Lovely. All right, then. I'll see you all soon. Until then, stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.